Here's Andy Udman.
Let me ask you about your comment, which some may be hearing for the first time, that you think pasteurized milk, which is the milk that most of Canadians drink, is hazardous. What do you mean by that rather explosive comment?
There is more and more evidence that because of the heat treatment of milk and because of the way how milk is produced nowadays, people are less and less able to digest that milk, and they actually develop chronic diseases because of that. And that is why they are seeking more and more the raw milk, which reverses completely the negative effects of pasteurized milk.
He's 57 years old. He lives an hour from London. He hasn't eaten in 3 weeks, and he's prepared to die so that you and I have the freedom to make our own decisions about what we eat. It's an incredible story which most of the media is ignoring. Here's the quote from Michael Schmidt, the Owen Sound farmer. I will go right to the end. I wouldn't do that if I wouldn't have tried for the last 17 years to establish a dialogue. If there had been one gesture of dialogue, but there was none. Michael Schmidt is not a nut bar. And you know what? He's not alone. If you only had an idea, if the media only had an idea how many supporters he had, this story would be on the front page, not on page 24. We're going to spend this hour talking about what it is Michael Schmidt is campaigning for. In studio this morning, Pam Colleen. Pam, I don't know what your impression is, but Michael Schmidt has not eaten now in 3 weeks.
Well, I spoke to Michael yesterday, and I am very, very concerned about his health. He sounded very, very weak on the phone, and you know, he's really just hoping that Dalton McGuinty will meet with him, and maybe even if he's lucky today. But that's it. He's been trying to create dialogue between himself and our government and himself and the University of Guelph now for close to 20 years. And every time he proposes an idea of doing research on raw milk, doing research about the type of agriculture he does on his farm, he's turned down. He's ignored. I mean, it's almost 20 years of being ignored by people who could benefit from learning from him.
No one calls this show clamoring for the right to buy raw milk. What's the big deal here?
Well, it's our freedom to choose. And this recent court decision could have some very far-reaching implications in that if the government is telling us what we can and cannot eat, then how far-reaching is that? Does that mean that the government will eventually tell us we can't eat meat or pork or vegetables or grains? Or, you know, how far-reaching is this? This is a very, very crucial court decision.
I know some people think Michael Schmidt is a nut bar, but the idea of raw milk is not exactly a long-forgotten idea from the past. California, for example.
Mm-hmm. This morning we'll have Mark McAfee on the show, and he's been selling raw milk in California for many, many years. It's never been illegal in California to sell raw milk. So you can go into a store in California and find raw milk, and it's a choice. So if you want the pasteurized version of the dairy, you can find it. You can buy it. But if you want the raw version, it's there for you.
Would you introduce Margot McIntosh?
Certainly. Well, Margot McIntosh is actually a Weston A. Price chapter leader. This is an organization that's international, and they're basically networking to get consumers to buy more nutrient-dense foods from local farmers. And she is actually campaigning nationally on a letter-writing campaign to support Michael Schmidt.
Margo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
Let me ask you, first of all, how's Michael? Do you know?
Well, he's in Toronto today, so I'm assuming he's still on his feet, but he is very weak.
What's he in Toronto for?
I believe he's... I'm not sure. I can't remember. There's been so many things going back and forth that...
Tuesday is the day that he drives his blue bus into Toronto to sell raw milk. Did he go on Tuesday, do you know?
I don't know.
Tell us what you're doing.
We're organizing rallies across the country for this. We're also doing a letter-writing campaign to every provincial and federal government person we can think of. We are working with the USA on this as well, so both countries are now on it. There's a huge, huge, huge movement for our freedom to choose food.
We have an Occupy Wall Street protest happening in cities all across the country, but to my knowledge, there are no protests in the street demanding the right to buy raw milk.
Yeah, well, there have been some rallies. There was the one in Owen Sound, and we've got them. They're going to happen right across the country on November 23rd, which is a date Michael asked us to do.
What do you sense support is like for raw milk, or are we just not clued into this issue?
There's huge support for raw milk across the country, and what is happening is a lot of people have been afraid to speak up because they're afraid that they could get into trouble for drinking raw milk. And what we're finding now is that people are coming out of the woodworks as they see this happening.
That's right, because this is about freedom of choice. And a lot of people who are supporting this campaign are not necessarily raw milk consumers. So they see the implications, the far-reaching implications.
Yes, for sure. They certainly do.
Margot, it chills me to read this quote in the Toronto Star this week from Michael. I will go right to the end. Do you think he will?
Oh, I absolutely believe he will. And that's one of the biggest reasons for the letter-writing campaign being so crucial right now. These letters have to get out in the next few days before he's not strong enough to speak to government.
Now, Margot, you're a farmer yourself?
No, I'm not, no.
But you do basically work alongside a lot of farmers, correct?
I do, yes. I'm a holistic nutritionist and a chapter leader for the Weston Price Foundation.
How many Canadians do you think consume raw milk? In other words, unpasteurized milk?
I would say thousands. By the support that I've been getting, I would say thousands. I don't know if there's any number exactly.
Yeah, there is.
On it.
Yeah, there's about 3% of the population is consuming raw milk.
Okay.
And they're able to get it.
Yes, they can get it in 27 states in the United States, and most of those states it's done through cow shares. In some states, it's legal, like in California, for instance, you can go into stores and it's sitting right on the shelf in many cases.
And you don't, like here, have to own part of the cow.
No, not in states like California.
We're going to take a short break back with a whole lot of people who are not only convinced that raw milk is healthy, but are convinced that some of the serious health issues we have in our society today are because of what we're doing to milk, pasteurizing it instead of drinking it raw. Back in just a moment right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
This is not a little issue anymore. It is about all our foods. It is about the farmer's freedom to decide to enter into a private arrangement with a farmer if they want healthy food. And the increasing dictatorship of bureaucrats on every aspect of our life and our health is becoming very dangerous, and that is why I decided to go on this hunger strike.
3 weeks now. Michael Schmidt has not eaten. Pam Colleen in studio with Andy Udman. Pam, it's so ironic to me that with this 100-mile diet catching on, with everybody talking about local and fresh and I want my produce from my local farmer. We've got this farmer who's offering exactly that and getting nowhere and now having to go on a hunger strike.
You know, in the United States, there are more prisoners than farmers, Andy. I mean, it's very similar here in Canada. There's very, very few farmers left. And, you know, back in the 1800s, most of us were farmers. We were producing our own food. And unfortunately, we've just become completely detached as to what is healthy food and healthy eating today. And you're right. Michael Schmidt is an answer for a lot of our health woes today. And nobody from the top down is looking at this as part of the solution to the problem. And he's there right in front of them and they're ignoring him.
Michael Schmidt is not the only raw milk farmer out there. We're joined now by Jacqueline Conklin, who is a raw milk farmer near Ottawa. Jacqueline, appreciate you joining us.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us. Not legal for you to produce raw milk and sell it in the store. How do you sell it?
I don't sell it. I have a cow share, similar to what Michael has, and people from various cities around the province have come and bought shares of our cows, and then they get access to the milk that their cows produce, and they just simply pay us to take care of their cow.
That's a lot of
their cow for them.
That's a lot of effort. Why are they going to that much effort?
Because it's good.
How's business these days, Jacqueline?
Very, very busy. Can't keep up.
Supplies increasing, demand's increasing?
Well, supply's not increasing too much, but demand is definitely. Every time Michael's in the news or raw milk is in the news, we get a flood of new calls for people looking for fresh milk. And up until now, we've been able to always be taking on new people. Right now, we're kind of maxed out where we stand at this time. So they just get to go on a waiting list and hope that some room becomes available.
So you actually have a waiting list for raw milk?
Yes.
Why? Why are people so passionate about it?
Well, people have done research into why they're not feeling well, why they're not healthy, why they're having terrible stomach pains and cramping when they're drinking milk from the stores. And the answers come back that try raw milk. And they try it, and they can drink it without any troubles, and are so happy to be able to get dairy back into their lives.
Now, what are the implications for you with regards to the recent court decision in Michael's case?
Very possible we could be raided at any moment. That's something that we've understood from the time we started.
You mean like Michael's?
We started our cow share program right after Michael was raided the first time, or the second time, I guess, in 2006.
So as in Michael's case, 20 armed officers could show up on your farm any minute now and try and basically shut you down.
They can come onto our property and take the products. I don't view it that they can shut me down. I view it that then we would start the legal process the same as Michael.
Jacqueline,
but they would take everything that's here when they came.
Wow. Well, you're doing it at considerable risk, no question about it. Want to bring, before the bottom of the hour, want to bring in an expert on this whole subject. Pam, if you would.
Right. Next, we have Dr. Ted Beals, and he's a pathologist. He lives in Michigan, and he was an expert witness in Michael's first trial, which occurred almost 2 years ago. So is Dr. Beals on the phone?
Doctor, appreciate
you. I am here. This is Dr. Beals.
Good morning.
Doctor,
yes, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, we thank you for joining us. There are some people hearing this go, I can't believe those guys on the radio. The guy near Owen Sound is just a nut bar. He didn't get the memo about the hippie movement from the 60s being left over. That's an isolated thing. Why is Andy making such a fuss about raw milk?
Because there's so terribly much misinformation out there that is being propagated by our government agencies and others who are in support of pasteurized milk. My wife and I are regular consumers of milk in its raw, unpasteurized, unprocessed form. We consume more than 3 gallons a week from our own personal dairy farmer.
Now, Dr. Beals, you're a pathologist. Could you just tell the audience, what is a pathologist? What is your expertise?
Well, first of all, I'm a trained physician, so I've graduated from medical school and then had 5 additional specialty years to learn exactly everything about disease process and how to recognize disease process. In the hospitals, the pathologist is in charge of all of the hospital laboratories that test specimens. We run the microbiology laboratories. The pathologist is the person that examines all of the biopsies, the pap smears, and the tissue that surgeons remove and give the physicians a report based on our observations of those tissues on what exactly the lesion is that the patient has. That's what a pathologist does.
Okay, we have 2 minutes, about 2 to 3 minutes before the bottom of the hour, Doctor. Here's my challenge to you. If you can describe how bad pasteurized milk can be for your health, and then move to how safe raw milk is.
Well, let me first of all say that I, like everybody else that's talked on this show, feel that this is a matter of choice. I don't disparage commercial milk. What I do is I say that I and everybody else who makes a personal decision that we want to have our milk in the fresh and unprocessed form is our choice, and we shouldn't be told by the government that we can't do that. I've been working very, very hard since my retirement to advocate for choice and to dispel the myths. One of the things that the data that I have gathered has shown conclusively is that I personally have a greater risk of being injured driving to get my milk than I do from drinking my milk. Furthermore, data that I have done and that has been supported by data from the federal government is that food illnesses attributed to pathogens is very extensive in the United States. I'm sure it's very similar in Canada. The CDC reports that 1 out of 6 people will become ill from one of the foodborne illnesses every year. And data that we have collected that looks at all of the illnesses that have been attributed to drinking raw milk amounts to 43 per year. So it's just unbelievable that anybody could say that drinking raw milk is a public health matter when we've got 1.5 million people who drink raw milk who would get sick from other foods and only 43 who might get sick from consuming the milk that they so very much want to drink.
Now, Dr. Beals, the bottom line is that you've calculated by using government numbers that raw dairy, raw milk, is 35,000 times safer than other foods, correct?
That is absolutely correct. That's the data that I just gave you.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a raw milk drinker, then you have a much, much thousands times greater chance of becoming ill from other foods than you do from raw milk.
Translation, just before we take the break at the bottom of the hour, Dr. Beals, if we all drank raw milk, how much healthier would we be?
Considerably healthier. I don't think it's going to be milk, period, is not good for everybody because there are people that have allergic reactions and intolerance. But there's a large number of people. Milk is one of our most important healthy foods that we can consume, and I advocate that everybody drink milk. And if there are large numbers of people out there who want their milk to be fresh and unprocessed, then they should not be told by their government that they can't do that.
Okay, really quickly, because we're almost out of time before we take the break, and we'll have you back on the other side. Here's the perception of most of our listeners. And that is that pasteurized milk is totally safe, raw milk is totally dangerous. You argue exactly the opposite. What's the rudest name you've been called for taking that position?
Oh, I don't pay much attention to the distractors that are out there. When I'm in court, the prosecuting attorneys, you know, attack me pretty vigorously. But, hey... I've been doing this for a long time. It does not bother me what people call me.
But you're also making some headway in Michigan. Maybe in the next half hour we can get into some details, unless you have something quick to say.
Do they think you've lost your marbles, Ted?
Absolutely not. How can you look at me and see the way I talk and the credentials that I have and the fact that I am a highly trained academic researcher and pathologist? It's just not possible to do that.
Doctor, we'll be back with all of our guests in the next half hour, and we'll open up the phone lines. Are you buying what they're selling? Raw milk. Do we need to get back to raw milk? Is pasteurizing our milk killing the nutritional aspects and exposing us to all kinds of serious diseases, as they are suggesting? We'll be back with all of that in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Let me ask you about your comment, which some may be hearing for the first time, that you think pasteurized milk, which is the milk that most of Canadians drink, is hazardous. What do you mean by that rather explosive comment?
There is more and more evidence that because of the heat treatment of milk and because of the way how milk is produced nowadays, people are less and less able to digest that milk, and they actually develop chronic diseases because of that. And that is why they are seeking more and more the raw milk, which reverses completely the effects of the negative effects of pasteurized milk. This is not a little issue anymore. It is about all our foods. It is about the farmer's freedom to decide to enter into a private arrangement with a farmer if they want healthy food, and the increasing dictatorship of bureaucrats on every aspect of our life and our health is becoming very dangerous, and that is why I decided to go on this hunger strike.
He's been into it 3 weeks. He's 57 years old. He's dying. He's dying. Just so that you would gain the freedom to eat what you want, to be able to buy and eat what you want, including raw milk. Just got an email during the break, Pam Colleen. I know this is going to make you smile. Pat writes, I used to go to my godparents' farm when I was a kid. Whenever I got sick, I used to get severe bronchitis and pneumonia, and so my parents would send me to the farm for a week or so. I drank raw milk, ate raw milk butter, oatmeal that took a half an hour to cook, fresh bread and jams made homemade from wheat that was grown and not genetically altered. I got healthy within 48 hours and stayed healthy for several weeks until I started back on pasteurized milk. And by the way, I didn't die. Back to the basics.
That's right. Even new research from Europe shows that children who drink raw milk are less likely to have allergies and asthma. And that's why I thought it was important to bring on Mark McAfee this morning from Organic Pastures Dairy in California. And he's been selling, millions of servings of raw milk out in California at a retail basis and has seen some tremendous health effects, benefits of drinking raw milk.
You see what I mean, folks? Well, that's the thing that's annoying about Pam Colleen. She brings all this research. She brings guests from halfway around the world. Mark McAfee, are you really down there in California?
I am. And Pam, thank you. You're a champion. And Michael, you're a... I can't speak more highly of Michael and what he's doing up in Canada for the citizens of Canada that are completely denied access from raw milk. When out in California, you got 65,000 people buying raw milk out of 400 stores for the last 12 years. And going back to 1927 with another dairy, Clarabelle Dairy here in California, without ever having an incident of an illness or death or anything related to raw milk. It's just a travesty that we would have this imbalance of access to real food.
Now, if you listen to our public health officials here in Canada, Mark, they would be thinking that with all that raw milk down in California, people would be dying in the streets. Is that happening?
The CDC, in their own humble way of collecting data, even though I don't agree with the way they've collected the data here in the United States, shows zero deaths from raw milk in the United States since 1973 when they started collecting data on any kind of illness, tomatoes, cantaloupes, anything. Nobody's died. They've got a laundry list of people that have died from pasteurized milk, but nobody's died from raw milk, fluid raw milk. And, you know, they've even commingled data sometimes back and forth between the two lists, between pasteurized milk and raw milk. But you're so right. The Gabriella study, the Parsifal study in Europe shows that children that drink and people that drink raw milk don't have asthma and allergies. Dramatic decrease in the incidence of asthma, allergies. And raw milk is a mast cell stabilizing food, which is tremendously wonderful for the immune system. Pasteurized milk is the most allergenic food in America. You can do it on any search engine, just say most allergenic food, and number one is pasteurized milk. So this is madness that the people of Canada can't have access to food that doesn't make their kids sick and allergenic.
Mark, I've got friends here in London who have kids who in the summertime on a smoggy day cannot go outside because they can't breathe. Are you literally suggesting that if they drank raw milk and not pasteurized milk, their asthma issue would not be as serious or might not be there at all?
You know, I never ever speak about one child, one specific set of circumstances. But when we look at the studies, we look at the anecdotal information, we look at the testimonials, and you look at the prevalence of asthma, and you look at when our experience here in California, kids that have problems with bad air, with contact with various different allergens in their environment, if they start drinking raw milk, their asthma gets better. I'm not going to suggest every child that does is going to be perfect, but in every case I'm aware of, their asthma has gotten better, dramatically better, sometimes completely gone within literally days or weeks. So this is not funny stuff. I mean, it's not like going to the doctor and getting shots of corticosteroids or taking Allopurinol inhalers. There is no side effects from drinking raw milk. So I don't get it here. Why can't we allow our children and our families to access whole, natural, unprocessed foods? That's what we've been eating for the last million years anyway. It defines us as mammals. We nurse our youngs with raw milk. And it's madness. It's all about the money, about protecting market for pasteurized milk. It's not about safety. The data is just not there. This is unsafe not to have this choice for our families and kids.
Now, in perspective here, there are 500 people, at least 500 people who die every year from asthma. And of course,
5,000. 5,000.
But in the United States?
4,000 to 5,000. In the United States, yes.
Yeah, it's about 500 in Canada, yeah.
Okay.
So if these people had access to this information and instead of using puffers, could learn more about nutrition in general, not just raw milk, but nutrition in general. I mean, imagine the benefits. But have you've been talking to universities. You've been talking about doing research in this area. Have you made any headway at all, Mark?
Yes, we've done some studying. But you know what? Study takes tremendous amounts of money. And professors are worried about their jobs. We know many professors at Rutgers, at Stanford, and other universities that literally don't want to lose their jobs because they start studying things. They have grants that actually have contradictory positions. So funding university studies is really a false hope, because it takes millions of dollars to do this. And then FDA claims, forget that, that's $2 billion in 3 years to make a drug claim on a food. It's actually a catch-22. You can't do it because you can't get the investment to do something that cannot be patented, because the food can't be patented. So the whole idea about getting appropriate medical claims on raw milk for asthma is very difficult. What we do have is a tremendous movement of people that are emailing one another, snotty nose and ear infections and asthma, allergies, and eczema anymore, and on top of that, no more lactose intolerance, you got to try raw milk. And as a result, in California, where we've built a very strong market with 400 stores growing at 20% per year without marketing, just outreach and education, that example is being shown. And the interstate and international jealousy is becoming very, very prevalent, that people that have relatives in Canada that live in California are sharing this back and forth, and it's a wildfire where people are saying, wait a minute, hold the horses, stop the presses. We need equality. We need some civil rights here in terms of our nutritional well-being and access to this food.
Now, you've done some interesting experiments using a lab and testing pathogens and how they survive in pasteurized milk and they don't survive in unpasteurized milk. We have Dr. Ted Beals in the background here listening. He's a pathologist. Can you tell the audience a little bit about that experiment that you did with BSK Labs?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that as we added different kinds of pathogens into raw milk, each one had a different survival rate. Some died off immediately because of competitive exclusion, because coliforms don't like salmonella. But then other ones survived a little longer but actually died off. So it's interesting how each bacteria had their own little ecosystem, ecocentric dynamic with the competitive bacteria, the yogurt-like bacteria found, the bifidobacteria, coliform bacteria, lactobacillus bacteria, that are found innately in raw milk when it's whole, complete food, that competitive exclude and suppress the growth of pathogens. And Dr. Ted Beals is a brilliant international researcher on the subject and can talk more extensively about it. But it's been demonstrated there, and it's certainly demonstrated in our gut. When we have good bacteria that reside in our gut and colonize the gut wall, that bad bacteria don't have a chance to live.
Mark, just before we let you go, we've got a farmer an hour north of the city where we're sitting in this radio studio. He's dying 3 weeks into a hunger strike. He feels so passionately about this issue. What do you say to our listeners about his crusade, about how dangerous pasteurized raw milk is not, and how we need to wake up on this issue?
We have literally citizens that are unconscious drones. They're robots being fed garbage by their governments and by commercial advertisements about the benefits of these long shelf life dead foods. Mike Schmidt and I are friends, close friends, and I feel his passion. I am so glad to be in California where raw milk is completely legal. It's a tragedy in Canada that it's not legal there as well. And Mike is giving everything he has, every last amount of his emotional energy, his blood himself, his body, his life, so that people can wake up and get out of this trance and realize and appreciate that whole natural foods are the way forward for sustainable medicine, that we have to nourish ourselves in order to be healthy, that going to the doctor more frequently is not the answer to medical problems, and that we're malnourished because we're eating improperly prepared foods. Foods we have are really, really processed to death, literally, in the case of pasteurized milk, and they make us sick. And I hope that Mike can end his fast and that people will listen to this. He hopefully can have a meeting with the premier and get some track forward, because the judges aren't listening. We need to get the legislature to listen in Canada and change the law in some way to allow people to have some freedom to access these foods that are so critical to their well-being.
Mark, we have to leave it there. We can't thank you enough for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Mark.
Short break.
Bye.
We'll be back with some concluding thoughts on this very important subject as Michael Schmidt, the farmer north of London, grows closer to his final hours, 3 weeks into a hunger strike. Back in just a moment here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Wow, was he a firecracker? Andy Udman in studio with Pam Colleen, our last guest. Wow.
Mark McAfee, amazing, amazing crusader, definitely.
Okay, we have had so many guests on this hour talking about raw milk, if you have just joined us, and we're just going to get a summary comment from each of them. Let's start with Margot, Pam.
With Margot, definitely what we need from Margot is website information so people know what to do with regards to this letter writing campaign. That's a national letter writing campaign, and they're asking people to write to your federal, provincial ministers and so on, just basically saying that you want your food freedom. You want to have the right to buy and consume your own food.
Yes, if they go to the Bovine, which is the bovine.wordpress.com, or they can go to Balance Your Apple, which is mine. We've got all the information there and examples of letters and that types of things.
Mm-hmm. That's balanceyourapple.com. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Margo, if you just hold that thought, I understand that we have now connected with Max Cain. Pam, who's Max Cain?
Max Cain is a farmer from Wisconsin, and he is basically on the hunger strike along with Michael, in support of Michael. There's several farmers doing this hunger strike, and he's one of them. So good morning, Max. Are you there?
Yes, I am, and good morning, and thanks for having me on.
Now, why is it that you're supporting Michael on this effort?
Well, that's a long answer, but what Michael's doing is he's really bringing a lot of people together, and I'm supporting him because I believe in him and the cause he supports. When I first contacted Michael, I told him I wanted to hunger strike with him, and he expressed concerns for my health. If you know Michael, you know that's the kind of a loving person. He's always thinking of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told him, well, I would hunger strike every other day with him, and that way I can show him support, and at the same time, he can be mentally focused on the things he needs to be focused on and not on the health of me.
How many other farmers are involved in this hunger strike?
There's a few around Wisconsin that I know of, but what I'd like to do is I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved in their own way, whether you hunger strike one day out of the week or 2 days out of the week or whatever it is. Everyone needs to get involved in this so we can create more of a sense of unity and more of a sense of co-responsibility for what's going on.
Max, it's one thing to have principles, but boy, when you start going on a hunger strike to back them up, and now you're doing it as well, what do you say to our listeners about this farmer up near Owen Sound and what he's doing?
About Michael?
Yes.
Michael's, if you know Michael, he's a man of principle and a man of integrity. And What can't you say about him? I mean, everyone needs to support him. He's doing the right thing. He's doing this for other people, not for his own glory. And we need to do everything that's possible to get a dialogue with not only the Canadian government, but with other governments with regards to our right to choose the food that we want.
Okay, a quick word before we let you go. By the way, you're from Wisconsin?
Absolutely.
I want to prove that. How do you say the word roof?
Actually, I'm from Chicago, so you're gonna get disproved. But I've been in Wisconsin for the past 6 years, and I actually came up here because I was searching for raw milk.
Okay, I was just joking, because when I was in Wisconsin, everybody said roof. Max, a message to our listeners about raw milk.
Raw milk is much more digestible than pasteurized milk. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when I was 10 years old. And the reason I searched out raw milk is because the pasteurized milk just totally tears my guts apart. I get, you know, everything under the sun from bloody diarrhea to vomit and just terrible GI disturbances. With raw milk, I can chug as much as I want, and I've put on a lot of healthy weight. I've been off medication for over 6 or about 7 years now. And I just encourage people, if you've never tried raw milk before, just give it a try one time. And develop your opinion from your own experience and not from the media onslaught of the funding from the dairy industry.
Max, we're out of time. We have to let it go. We thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Max.
Terrific. Wow.
And he's coming up to the rally at Queen's Park on November 23rd. Margot confirmed the date earlier. It is November 23rd in front of Queen's Park, and it is a rally in support of Michael. So I encourage people to collaborate together to drive and be there.
Dr. Ted Beals, just to summarize, if you would, your impressions of what you've heard this hour and where we are on this issue.
We've heard from a lot of people who are actively consuming milk in its fresh and unprocessed form and saying what the benefits are and why they do it. We have heard conclusive scientific evidence that the hysteria about the public health threat and the inherent dangers of milk when it hasn't been pasteurized just are not true. And we've got we briefly talked about the very current and very scientifically supported data from Europe, which shows that children who drink raw milk compared to children that drink pasteurized milk, have a considerable reduced incidence of asthma and childhood allergies.
Doctor,
the data is overwhelming.
Doctor, just what you said in the last 15 seconds is reason to have this whole argument. I mean, imagine if it could be, if we were all convinced that drinking raw milk instead of pasteurized milk would see a noticeable decrease in asthma in our children. I mean, that's why we need to be talking about this. Okay, now let's go to Jacqueline. You're a raw milk farmer near Ontario. You concerned about Michael Schmidt, now 3 weeks into a hunger strike?
I am concerned. I'm actually going up to visit with Michael on Saturday at his farm, my husband and I. I'm concerned about him, but I have all the confidence in the world that everything's going to end up right. I believe that Dalton McGuinty has the power to end this right now, and it doesn't. It's just such a simple thing. All he has to do is sit down and meet with Michael. I think everyone needs to be putting as much pressure on Dalton McGuinty right now as possible, just to have a dialogue. You know, we're not looking. I don't think Michael's looking for any firm commitments. He just wants to be able to have the conversation that we've had this hour and get things started.
Absolutely. I just wanted to make time for a real quick call from Jack. I mean, I've said on this show whenever we talk about raw milk, I'm 6'3". I was raised on raw milk. Jack, what's your story?
Oh, I'm looking right at my dad's graduation. Ontario Agriculture College, 1938. It's called Dairy Class, and it's in Guelph. And he passed cheesemaker school, and he made butter and whatnot. You know how many cheese factories and butter places there were around this part of London?
Jack, we're almost out of time. What do you say to our listeners about raw milk
There's nothing wrong with raw milk. It tastes like a vanilla milkshake compared to the watered-down stuff we buy.
Jack, appreciate it. Pam, I'll just go through each of our guests. I mean, each of them, but so kind of us, them to join us this hour.
Absolutely. Margot McIntosh, and she's a Weston A. Price chapter leader, and she's campaigning to support Michael with a nationwide letter writing campaign. Be sure to write to your local ministers, provincial and federal.
Margot, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
A word for Jacqueline.
And then Jacqueline Conklin, she is a raw milk farmer near Ottawa. Thank you for joining us this morning, Jacqueline, and keep up the crusade. And Dr. Ted Beals from Michigan, who has been collecting and analyzing the data for many, many years now.
Doctor, your Reader's Digest 10-second version on raw milk versus pasteurized.
Raw milk is about benefits. Everybody that is possibly can drink raw milk should be drinking it. We need more people to be drinking this healthy food and get away from this unsubstantiated dogma that it's bad for you.
That's right. And I'm teaching classes, Andy, and, you know, public health, anybody is welcome to come to my classes so they can learn more about raw milk. I'm teaching again this Saturday. The following Saturday, I have a full class on raw milk that I'll be teaching about and so on and so forth. I teach these classes 2 times a year. And, you know, it's hard to get public health, any government officials even, to come to my classes. And I really wish they had an open mind on this issue.
Doctor, thank you so much. And Jacqueline, thank you so much. We're going to let
Thanks,
you go.
Her.
Okay, I've got a special favor to ask you, Pam.
Sure.
There's a story that, I mean, you say, you're the one, and this is, to me, your signature phrase. We are sicker, fatter, and more depressed than we've ever been. Just shocking figures to me on ABC News last night about how many Americans and Canadians are now on antidepressants. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about it. We're going to ask you to stay over for a few minutes to talk about it. We want to hear your stories, folks, 643-1290. What is with everybody taking antidepressants? What are we doing wrong? We'll have the figures. We'll have your reaction, Pam Colleen Spen, when we come back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Trying to make you healthy, folks.
We got a stunning window onto American life today. New numbers showing that 1 in 10 of us is on an antidepressant. That's a 400% increase in the last 15 years. And women, especially middle-aged women, are 2.5 times as likely to be on those pills as men. Why?
You see, it's not just Pam Colleen. Some people say, I think Pam makes some of that stuff up. Ryan, I'm going to ask you again. This is Diane Sawyer, anchor of the ABC Evening News. Pam says repeatedly, we are sicker. We are fatter. We are more depressed than ever. Folks, are you listening?
We got a stunning window onto American life today. New numbers showing that 1 in 10 of us is on an antidepressant. That's a 400% increase in the last 15 years. And women, especially middle-aged women, are 2.5 times as likely to be on those pills as men. Why?
Why, Pam?
Well, first of all, women are more likely to come forward and express the fact that they're depressed. They're more likely to go to the doctor and talk about this feeling that they have. And men are less likely to come forward. However, men are struggling just as much.
You nailed it, because in that report last night, they said women are more likely to come forward, but the numbers are staggering. Folks, I want to just invite you to just call us and share on this painful subject. I have a friend who suffered from depression. It is an ugly, ugly thing to deal with. Not that other diseases aren't a whole picnic to deal with, but depression is this... You just want to grab your friend and say, you know what? Just suck it in. I've had a tough day, too. Why are you depressed? And now we see the staggering numbers of people who are taking drugs to deal with depression. I want to play you that full ABC report in just a moment. Belinda, what's your story?
I went to my doctor with hot flashes and things like that, and his immediate reaction was to go on Effexor for menopause relief. And I'm sure that's why a lot of women are on it. I said, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll just ride the wave.
Well, if you were on Effexor and had your urine tested, they would accuse you of being on angel dust, by the way.
No, I didn't take it. I just
that's the same
at
chemical
said,
composition as angel right. dust.
But, Belinda, these figures are absolutely staggering, suggesting that 1 in 10 Americans, North Americans, are on antidepressants. Do you see this around you?
Oh, yeah.
And about 70% of people, Andy, who are struggling with depression don't go for help. They are suffering in silence on a daily basis.
Well, no, I haven't seen anybody walking around go with their hand up, hey, folks, I got an announcement, I'm depressed. Belinda, how do you see it then?
That's still a stigma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
a
how...
A stigma. And I think also, you know, when you let all these people out of the hospitals, what are you doing with them? You want to drug them and keep them... You know, on an even keel.
Belinda, let me ask you that question. Like, people do not go around with their hand up saying, I'm suffering from depression. So how do you see it in the people around you?
Well, I have a few people in the family that do suffer from that.
Mm-hmm.
And they go from drug to drug. And it seems to me like there's too many drugs.
That's right. And, you know, the sad part of it all is, in my book, I talk a lot about this. It's called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. And in my book, I talk about the malnutrition aspect of depression and how basically we've known for decades through research that, you know, the first symptoms associated with malnutrition are going to be psychological symptoms, everything from memory loss to depression, sleep disorders, anxiety, and so on. And instead of diagnosing people or looking for malnutrition in patients, doctors are basically just writing prescriptions. And I think that's, quite honestly, that's neglect. They need to do more. They need to do more on the educational side and motivate people towards good nutrition.
Belinda, what Pamela just said is, I think, phenomenal. But people just don't believe it. They don't understand it. Do you believe it? Do you understand it?
Oh, totally. Because that's my, like I said, with my experience, you walk in and the first thing they do is say, you know, here, take this. And is that because there's not enough doctors, too many patients? Are they pressed for time? Are the pharmaceutical companies getting their, you know, too much of their share in there? I'm not sure what the answer is.
Are you still taking antidepressants, Belinda?
No, I would not take them. I said, no, thanks. I don't want the hormone replacement. I don't want that. I guess I'll just have to, you know, put my feet up when or whatever when I feel that way, you know, or put a cool cloth on my face. But I don't want to deal with drugs for everything.
No kidding. No kidding. Belinda, we've got to play this report because I promised it to our listeners. The full report last night on ABC News. This is not Pam Colleen making it up. It's not Andy Udman sensationalizing something that Pam or somebody else said. This is ABC News. Listen to the staggering figures.
It's a staggering number. More than 1 in every 10 Americans over age 12 is taking an antidepressant. Even more shocking, among women age 40 to 59, nearly a quarter of them are on these medications. Maria Garay, a working mom of two, believes she knows why women turn to the medications.
It's hard to manage a household, children, husband, friends, and work. It's a lot. We have a lot on our shoulders.
The study found women overall are 2.5 times as likely to take antidepressants as men. Doctors say it appears depression hits women more often. They're not sure why. But they do know why women are more apt to be taking a pill.
Could it also be that women are more likely to seek treatment, though?
Yes, absolutely. I think women are more comfortable saying, I think that there's a problem I'm having with my emotions.
Maria began taking antidepressants this summer, and she says it's helping.
I was feeling not myself, like really moody, crying spells, lack of sleep.
Experts tell us despite all the theories, hormones, life pressures, there's no clear scientific evidence about why women may be more susceptible to depression.
But it's clear whatever makes them blue, women are relying on antidepressants more than men. And now they're doing it at unprecedented levels. Lisa Stark, ABC News, Washington.
I got to apologize to you, Pam, because I have not mentioned your book. I mean, people ask me, well, what are Pam's credentials? I said, go to Chapters Bookstore and pick up this book. Tell me about the book, what prompted you to write it.
It's called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. And essentially in my book, I say the leading risk factor to developing addictions today is depression. And depression is our number one health problem. I mean, if you look at the cost of disability in companies today, that's where they're spending most of their disability money. And so why is it that the rates of depression are increasing, more drugs are being dispensed, but we're not solving the problem? If the drugs were actually working, you'd think that depression would be on the decline, and it's not. And that's because the drugs, number one, are not addressing the underlying biochemical imbalance that are associated with depression. And number two, these drugs actually damage an already damaged brain.
Pam, when we come back, we have to take a short break. The numbers are jaw-dropping. This is not me. This is not you. This is last night on ABC News. One out of four women between the ages of 40 and 59 taking antidepressants. One out of four. Not one out of 400. Not one out of 40. One out of four. We have an epidemic. That's why Pam wrote the book. Now, Belinda had the courage to tell her story. I'm inviting you to share yours, 643-1290. Are you one of these four women, one out of four? We'll be back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290, CJBK.
We got a stunning window onto American life today. New numbers showing that 1 in 10 of us is on an antidepressant. That's a 400% increase in the last 15 years, and women, especially middle-aged women, are 2.5 times as likely to be on those pills as men. Why?
Pam, we were just talking during the break. Why do 1/4 of women between 40 and 59 take medication for depression?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with our low-fat lie. You know, this pervasive belief system that animal fat and cholesterol join the dark side. It became very, very prevalent in the 1970s. And in the 1980s is when you see people, especially women, dropping with yuppie flu, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and so on. And it was really because we made a sharp transition in our diets towards actually an unhealthy diet, even though it was tainted as being a healthy diet. So in women's quest to be skinny and following these low-fat diets, unfortunately, it's starving their brains and causing for a lot of moodiness, a lot of problems with depression, anxiety, sleep, and so on.
To me, it's just staggering when you begin to wrap your mind around 1 out of 4 women between 40 and 59 on medication for depression. There's not only the health effects on them, but all the spinoff effects on their family, on their employer, on their community. It's
paralyzing to communities. It's paralyzing to families. I mean, it's destroying people's hopes and dreams. You know, people deserve to be mentally well as they should be physically well. And then you can't have both. If you're not mentally well, you're not going to be physically well. If you're not physically well, you're not going to be mentally well. It goes hand in hand.
Let's go to the phones. Dave, what's your story?
Good morning, Andy. Thanks for taking my call. I think, you know, the sadness here is that for a percentage of women, and I don't know what it would be, yes, there would be a chemical imbalance or hormonal imbalance, but I think the for most of them, women, sadly today, and for men as well, suffer from failing to live up to perceived expectations. And when you think about what men and women see and are bombarded with from sun up to sundown, It's from magazines to movies to TV shows. This is how a woman is supposed to look. I'm sure if you ask my grandmother, who was born in the 1890s, was she concerned whether her lips were full, whether her waist was thin enough or her breasts were large enough, she'd probably look at you like you were crazy. But today, these are standards by which women are forced to subliminally try to live up to. And when they don't, they feel that they have failed, that they are somehow inadequate. And this is the cause, this is the byproduct of marketing every product that we see out there. I mean, a woman driving down the road sees a billboard. I can tell you, I was at my daughter's high school game, and I can tell you for the boys, it's the six-pack abs. The football team came off the field, and the guys that had the six-pack abs, they were walking through the halls of this high school with their shirts off. It's pressure, and I think that is really the bulk of what causes these problems.
I don't know that you'd totally agree, would you, Pam?
Well, it definitely has something to do with it, because it does tie into dieting and fad dieting, you see, and that in itself is starving the brain, you see. So, yes, it is the images exactly as Dave has described, but with those expectations, of course, in order to achieve those expectations, fad dieting is the answer, and it's not the answer, because it's actually causing us all sorts of health problems. You know, this notion of becoming skinny or thin is very, very new to society. When you look at the history of the corset, sure, and then the girdle, and then you go to the 1920s and the flapper dancers, and then you fast forward to Sophia Loren, and then you fast forward to Twiggy and Barbie in 1959. You know, when you see the history of this skinny female image, that's where we are today, and it's really fabricated by man. It's not very natural, and it's certainly not healthy. And even published research data shows that if you have a BMI of 25, in other words, for the average person, if you're 20 pounds overweight, you're probably going to live longer and be healthier than somebody who has a BMI of less than that.
Dave, these numbers for depression, do you see this in the circles in which you travel, depression?
No, but I'm aware of it. But as you said, it's people do not talk about it. It's something that, as much as you say, like, tough it up, you know, get on with it, I think people suffer in silence. I mean, you certainly look at the levels of recreational drug use or alcohol on a hidden scene. Absolutely, people medicate themselves in many ways. The obesity factor can also be contributed for comfort food. There's many. My mother was a dietitian. We talked about this in the 1960s. You know, people look ways to ease their pain, and in many ways, again, I belong to a club, a fitness club, for over 30 years. And I can ask you to tell you about any guy that's ever dated a girl that's competing in a competition for a fitness or whatever. They're horrible to live with because, as you're saying, they're starving themselves. They're moody. How could you not? I mean, you starve me, I'm not going to be the happiest camper.
No, I know
either.
You're absolutely right, Dave. I know a lot of people in the fitness industry, and you know, they're on these fad diets, and they have terrible problems with mood and even addiction.
Well, as I said to Andy, and I said, you know, imagine if the world were blind. Imagine maybe how happier we would all be if you could just take away the visual clues that force us all to do things that we're genetically not designed to do, which is to starve ourselves, that we strive for a perfection. And by the way, if you look at the marketing, and they're pointing it out now that they're photoshopping Julia Roberts and photoshopping male actors and whatever. Gee, if some woman can't live up to Julia Roberts, they must look in the mirror and go, I have no chance. And if they're, you know, and this is, again, the tragedy of marketing that I think people are just bombarded by, and they feel inadequate, that they somehow have not achieved what they should, and that's the great shame.
Mm-hmm. Wow. No, I agree with you.
Thanks so much for the call.
Andy.
Wow.
I address some of those expectations in my book, and I do say that, you know, it's these expectations that leave people in this constant state of disappointment, that they cannot be good enough. You know, oh my goodness, I have a gray hair, or oh my goodness, I have a wrinkle, or I can't look like Julia Roberts, and that too wears down the psyche. And so all of it does play a role, but I do emphasize what is being overlooked. I'm addressing all of the other factors here, and Dave is correct, but what is being overlooked is the nutritional component, and I think that has to be added to the equation. Whenever you read these stories about increased rates of depression, generally what it does is it drives the sale of more pharmaceutical drugs. It doesn't lead to the answer of nutrition and what the importance is of eating animal fat and cholesterol and how that stabilizes mood.
It struck me, the one clip of the woman in the report from Diane Sawyer and Lisa Stark was, she said, but, you know, I have two kids, I have a husband, I have a job. And I'm thinking, hello, when I was a kid, mothers had 10 children, they had 12 children, they were working on the farm, they had stress in capital letters. Not that women don't have it tough today.
No, but actually what it is, Andy, what it really is all about is people are too busy to make meals from scratch anymore. And so they're eating on the run, and they can't control the kind of animal fat that they're eating, and they can't necessarily control the amount of carbohydrates they're eating. So they're not eating enough of the nutrient-dense foods that will support and stabilize their biochemistry. So, you know, when you eat at a restaurant, they're probably going to use margarine. They're going to use vegetable oils. If you're at home, you want to use butter. You want to use lard. You want to use tallow. You want to use the more stabilizing fats to make sure that you can stabilize your mood. And when you're eating on the run, it's impossible to control all the variables.
And how much of this do we hear from our local medical officer of health?
Never. They never emphasize that cooking food from scratch is actually a survival skill. And that's what it is. It is a survival skill today. Before World War II, we made our food, you know, we made all of our meals from scratch. Basically, we sat down and had three square meals. We ate for, you know, we weren't fat phobic, cholesterol phobic. We weren't meat phobic, liver phobic, egg phobic, dairy phobic. We didn't have any of those phobias. We ate three square meals a day, and we were far healthier then than we are now. And that includes our mental health.
Wow. Physical health is very important, and I know in that regard, you have a tennis match in just a few minutes. You've interrupted your plans to go to that by staying on with us. Thank you so much. This is an incredibly important topic. And folks, Pam Killeen wrote the book. The book is called...
It's called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, and it really is about the food and mood connection. Now, both the copies are available at both chapters, North and South, and I will be announcing, I'm going to be doing a book signing at Chapter South in November. So, you know, you're more than welcome to come and see me down at the book signing. I'll announce the date next week, Andy. I think it's the second Saturday in November, but I can't be sure.
And so, again, your website?
It's pamkillene.com. And this Saturday, I'm going to be teaching about how to integrate healthy foods into your kitchen, into your lives. And I'm teaching for the next three Saturdays at Central Library.
Well, I just want to address, because I get some flack for having you on as much as I do, and about setting the agenda. Some people say, wait, don't tell me I'm setting the agenda. Listen to the reports like the one on ABC News last night, like the book that Pam has written. It is a huge, huge problem. Depression, one in four women between 40 and 59. Thanks, Pam.
Thank you, Andy.
Short news update when we come back.